everybody, and welcome back to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hemming, and joining me today is Laura Townsend, Communications Director from campaigning organisation 38 Degrees. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. First up then, Laura, what is 38 Degrees, and where does the name come from as well?
So to a lot of people, I think 38 Degrees is quite commonly known as the organisation that sends them quite a lot of emails. But what's happening behind that is that we are a campaigning organisation, but one that's powered by people rather than powered by kind of a room full of lobbyists. So we have about 3 million people all over the UK who are members of 38 Degrees. And what being a member means is just that you have done something or do something like take a small action, something like signing a petition or sending an email that gets you involved in a campaign and gets you involved in politics. And 38 Degrees members are a pretty formidable bunch. There are things like forests you can walk in and hospitals that can treat you now because members all over the country have saved them. And the name comes from, I've heard a lot of different stories about how it's been named from a kind of a fever-like temperature to something else, but actually it is named after the angle at which an avalanche happens. So apparently on a very snowy mountain, when the snow reaches an angle of 38 degrees, that's the tipping point at which all the kind of individual snowflakes come together to kind of cause a massive transformational change. So you can see that allegorical leap to the power of kind of people-powered campaigning that is the thing that really fuels our work and that wins all of our campaigns.
And you completely bury the opposition at the bottom of a massive snowdrift.
Well, we try not to talk too much about the obvious, you know, the human cost of avalanches is really the idea of the kind of the people power that can trigger something that you didn't think was possible.
I understand. So take me through, before we get stuck into the meaty topic of Brexit, take me through a couple of examples of your most successful campaigns.
So one of our most successful campaigns and the thing that actually triggered, I think, a real breakthrough moment for 38 Degrees was a massive campaign a few years back about saving Britain's publicly owned forests. So this was the moment when I think 38 Degrees went from being a quite small organisation known for sort of being on the internet to one that suddenly gained a really big voice in the media and a bigger place in British public life. So the idea was that the government was considering selling off some of Britain's publicly owned woodland. So woodland that families can play in and people can go for a walk in to private companies. And this triggered a huge uproar from 38 Degrees members who were constantly contacting the office team, who at the time was a fairly small office team, warning them about this huge threat to Britain's forests and asking the 38 Degrees office team to start a campaign and do something. And that's kind of characteristic of quite a lot of the way that 38 Degrees works, which is all about being member-led. So we are able to be independent, for instance, because our members are the ones who fund everything that we do. They donate fivers and tenners, and that's what funds our work. And after the office team got enough emails and enough phone calls, they set up a campaign. And after working with partners, after a long, hard slog, and after a lot of people had got involved, won the campaign and the government U-turned on their plans. Another kind of good example is also the campaign that we ran against cuts to child tax credits, which the government was planning on a couple of years ago. So for that, we were kind of a slightly more mature, slightly more well-resourced organisation with a much bigger membership. So for that campaign, we were able to run really localised effective campaigns targeting specific MPs, where we were able to go to a lot of the people who are members of 38 Degrees who would themselves be affected by cuts to tax credits, so the money that people on low incomes but working needs to live on, and make it much easier for those people to contact their MPs but also have their voices heard in the media. And we did things like buy up big billboards, which we fundraised for in specific constituencies to pressure MPs. And again, with some work with partners and with some work with MPs who were already speaking out, managed to get the government to mostly U-turn on that cut that would have had quite a massive effect on people's lives. So there are a couple of examples of how we run campaigns, but we hope and like to think in a more people-powered way than your traditional campaigning group, and in a way which helps people really feel their own sense of power to change politics.
Yeah, you mentioned billboards there, and that was a point I wanted to come on to, because you're not just a digital organisation at all, are you? You've been quite creative in your lobbying. I see you've hired bikes to circle council offices with advertising. You've mm-hmm. descended on Parliament Square dressed as beekeepers, and you've camped out in public toilets. So taking a novel approach to campaigning in some ways, you think these things really have an impact?
Yeah, I think they do. I think you're definitely right that often when I meet an ordinary person, they say to me, oh yeah, 30 degrees, the ones that send me emails. And that's fairly similar to what an MP would say when I meet an MP as well. But often it doesn't take very long to be kind of a part of a 38 degrees campaign to feel that you can have power in another way, whether that's by really simple things like tweeting an MP or calling a radio phone in, to donating for really big tactics like billboards or like ad vans. One of my best days at work was when I discovered that the ad vans and bikes that you can hire to drive around Parliament also have speakers embedded in them, so you can also hire them to kind of play out little mottos or slogans of your campaign as well. So there are lots of really imaginative ways that we can use all the different assets and resources that our members have to allow them to kind of really pool those resources and put them together in a campaign that hopefully makes impact. And we've definitely found our impact, I think, has grown since we started investing in things that allowed our members to meet in real life and to use lots of different tactics across loads of different communication channels to reach people who want to make decisions. And that includes corporates as well. I think we're very well known for doing Westminster-focused political campaigns, but actually we've had some impressive wins as well when we've been able to target corporates on social media, which they're deeply sensitive to. Lots of them invest tens of thousands of pounds in agencies or in-house teams which kind of ruthlessly monitor their social media. So we found that to be an incredibly effective tool that can kind of really tip a corporation within hours sometimes to allow people to do something really small, like write on their Facebook wall or send them a tweet, to get them to change an area of corporate practice that needs changing.
It sounds like 38 degree members are quite energised and quite engaged in what they're doing. But how much concern do you have from online polls in general, online campaigns in general? Now, I think there is a rise in them, that people would just tick a box, say, yeah, I support that. And that's all they then do. So can it lead to apathy?
I see what you mean. There's a lot of arguments like that around, and I can see why people feel that this kind of newer, more broadly engaging political activism can initially appear a bit, you know, it doesn't quite match up to kind of being a member of a political party or kind of going on Greenham Common back in the 70s.
Yeah.
But I think one of the benefits of this is that it can engage a far wider range of people. So we see people from really all walks of life who kind of take part in 38 degrees. So people who maybe live with a disability, or who have five kids and not very much time, or people who work night shifts. So it sounds pretty facile, if I'm honest, but for those people, very traditional, very high bar forms of political activism just are tougher. And I think the benefits of kind of simpler digital things is that it allows people to join winning campaigns and growing movements without having to devote 5 hours of their life each week in a political party meeting. I think one thing that we find is that a lot of the people who initially do something simple, like sign a petition, then do go on to do something like donating or emailing their MP or taking part in a longer survey. So, for instance, this week we have run a really quite big poll of lots of our members on how to solve the social care crisis, which is very different from Brexit, but you could say equally complicated and equally devilish a problem. And we've had thousands and thousands of responses to a problem that I think politicians themselves don't seem to have massive answers to. So I think there's lots of evidence to show that people will do very simple things like signing a petition, but are also, when they're presented with new easy mechanisms to get involved in politics, will also really go quite far to having their say and being part of a solution as well.
Okay, let's move on to Brexit, and I see that you are running a DIY Brexit campaign. You recently put out a survey called the Great British Brexit Survey.
Mm-hmm.
I think you had about 70,000 take part in.
Mm-hmm.
So what were your key findings from the survey?
So I have to say one of our key findings was a rather depressing one. So the name Great British Brexit survey is quite jolly and patriotic. But one of our key findings is that most people who took it, so around 86% of people who took it, said that they didn't feel like their voice was being heard on Brexit right now. And that's really a problem that cuts to the heart of why we're running this campaign. Because our members are honestly fairly evenly split about Brexit. We have a roughly even split of leave, remain, don't care type voters who take part in 38 degrees. But what unites them is a really strong desire to make Brexit more open to public opinion and to make the process less about EU politicians and British ones kind of trapped in smoke-filled rooms, making long negotiating transits, and much more about listening to what the British people want from Brexit. So DIY Brexit is really all about the public coming up with a vision for what post-Brexit Britain should look like on lots of different areas that are relevant to Brexit. So the economy, trade, the NHS, the environment, that kind of thing. So when the vote originally happened, we ran a big survey, much bigger than our most recent one, where we had about 500,000 people who told us what they wanted a post-Brexit Britain to be like and the things that were most important to them, from stuff like helping people who keep the NHS going to stay in the UK, all the way to making sure that post-Brexit trade deals are fair and don't compromise our economic freedoms and our environmental protections. So the DIY Brexit project is really all about making sure that the public have a proper voice in Brexit and making politicians listen to them.
I understand. Yeah, you said that your members kind of mirror in the electorate, a split 50-50. Do you ever have the situation where you have two campaigns that could be running that could oppose each other because people have different views, or would they just cancel one another out?
Hypothetically, yes, that's possible, particularly because a lot of our members really love taking part in a bit of 38 Degrees called Campaigns by You, which is essentially where we've opened up the technology behind our petitions and our campaigns to the public. So anybody can set up a petition and make a winning campaign with us. So hypothetically, we could have two different campaigns running at the same time. But we found there to be quite a lot of consensus amongst our members on some really core issues. So the survey that you just mentioned, the Great British Brexit Survey, found a really overwhelming support for kind of two core issues being the most important for people in the UK. The first one was the economy and jobs, and the second one was protecting and improving the NHS. Another massive issue that we found a phenomenal amount of consensus on was actually something that when I first came across this campaign, thought would never work and thought was deeply jargony, deeply processy, which is around this issue of delegated powers and Henry VIII powers in the EU withdrawal bill. So I will spare you all of the kind of constitutional legal stuff, but it's essentially around the government's ability to make laws and change laws without a vote after the withdrawal bill passes. So it's called Henry VIII because he granted himself a phenomenal amount of kind of executive powers to change laws without a vote. And it's a fairly, as I think you can probably tell, fairly kind of jargony constitutional problem, but one that's phenomenally united our members from each side of the kind of the Leave Remain spectrum. Because whether you think Brexit's the best thing or the worst thing to happen to the UK, most people probably don't want the Prime Minister and Cabinet of of any party to have the power to make laws without a proper parliamentary vote. And we've seen really lots of support for that campaign. So I think our petition's on around 300,000 at the moment, and we've just raised a fairly decent chunk of money from our members to commission some research into exactly the what might happen if these powers might be abused by governments in the future.
Yeah, we've those Henry VIII powers, the powers of the Fat King, as you've mentioned there. We've had Gina Miller on the show a couple of times, and she's been a key campaigner in terms of challenging that right of government just to run roughshod, would be how she would put it. So you have, I mean, I've got a figure of 330,000 signed a petition on those, which for...
Well, you're more upstate than me, yeah.
Which could be, you know, as you said there, it could be seen as quite a jargon, I mean, even quite a dry and nuanced topic in one respect, but could have huge impacts on the other. With all those signatures, what do you do next? So if, let's use this one as an example. What then happens?
So this campaign actually has a fairly straightforward and fairly exciting next step, because it's a bill currently going through Parliament. And so the way that I often see petitions is I don't think anybody would think that a petition by itself will win a campaign. But the way that we tend to see petitions is that they are the start of a good campaign. And crucially, they're the thing that helps bring together a group of people who are then going to go on to take further action. So in this case, we've already seen these people donate enough money for a really thorough expert report, which looks at delegated powers, looks at how they've increased in use over the years, and looks at the potential negative consequences of an overuse of delegated powers in a parliamentary democracy. But what will then happen after Parliament comes back from its conference recess is that the EU withdrawal bill will then go into its committee stage and then go into further votes in the House of Parliament. And that means that there are huge opportunities for people in there, potentially hundreds of thousands, to contact their individual MP and try, as their constituent, to influence how that MP will vote on the bill or how that MP will vote on amendments to the bill. So what we're aiming to do with this campaign is not to overturn the EU withdrawal bill, but to add some amendments which will significantly strengthen the power of democracy and make sure that this bill won't include any provisions or any elements which could give governments the power to change the laws kind of essentially in secret or in back rooms. So there'll be lots of votes in the Commons, which we think from people we're speaking to and kind of our calculations are going to be really fairly close on these amendments. So what we're aiming to do is to mobilise those 330,000 people to contact their MPs and make sure that we can secure some really robust amendments to this bill to make sure that it's a good piece of legislation and not one that could compromise democracy.
Sure. I guess to counter that, the argument that would be that unless they can vote some of these Henry VIII powers, that the Brexit process, which is already stagnating somewhat, could just get tripped up even further because it would take so long to get anything through.
I can see that point. I think for a lot of people that we've spoken to, these laws would be a massive challenge to the power of democracy, and that it for a law is kind of as significant as the EU withdrawal bill, we need to get it right. There are also a lot of, not to get too technical, but a lot of really pretty well drafted amendments out there already. So for instance, Dominic Grieve, I believe, is putting forward some strong amendments here, which I think means that, you know, there clearly is the political will, there's parliamentary ability to sort out some of the really troubling elements of this potential law, which should mean that it's more likely to kind of smooth the process of Brexit by making sure that we have vaguely similar parliamentary processes happening after Brexit than beforehand. I think what no 38 Degrees member wants, however they voted, is Brexit kind of heralding a new era of really sloppy lawmaking that goes on behind closed doors, which I think at worst is what the delegated powers elements of this bill could bring in.
Okay. It's talking on more general terms in terms of Brexit, seems I think we're nearing the end of the fourth round of negotiation. We're still not much further forward on some of the key issues, citizens' rights, the divorce bill, nor the Irish border issue that the EU chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, said must be agreed upon before we can move on to the trade talks. From your point of view, how do you see the Brexit process unfolding so far?
I think a lot of 38 Degrees members find some of the way it's unfolding fairly uninspiring, to be honest, partly because I think a lot of the more kind of detailed, quite jargony, very bureaucratic media coverage from the people I talk to in the public and from members I speak to, honestly, that kind of coverage and that kind of news story passes a lot of people by. I think a lot of it feels quite dislocated from the ordinary things that affect people's lives. So, you know, how will their local NHS ward be staffed, for instance, is not quite the language that any politician is really speaking right now. And I think people are also looking crucially to be heard, which is something that I think is fueling the success of a lot of the meetings that our members are having with their MPs. So far, we've had about 160, 170-odd meetings between teams of 38 Degrees members and constituencies. So kind of crack squads of a few members, half of whom voted Remain, half of whom voted Leave, who are going to their local MP to talk through this DIY Brexit manifesto that we've created together and also talk about local issues. And I think what I found when I speak to the members who've gone to those meetings is that they come out of those feeling much more heard and much clearer about what their MP will do to protect their local interests than they do when they see the latest news report of the meeting between Barnier and May, which I think often passes a lot of ordinary people by.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because the meetings you've just referred to, you had a DIY Brexit MP meeting and petition handing with the Health Minister, Jeremy Hunt, I believe. I was going to ask you what the feedback was from that.
I don't have that with me right now, but I'm happy to look it up. One of the opportunities and challenges of these meetings is that obviously the MPs do them in their role as a constituency MP rather than their role as a cabinet minister. So often there is a bit of a Chinese wall between what they can speak about as a cabinet minister versus a constituency MP. So I would hazard a guess that Jeremy Hunt spoke a bit more about Surrey and a bit less about the NHS than you might expect.
Okay. And then just on a final couple of questions, and thank you for your time today. How, if there was one way to get people more engaged with the Brexit process, you know, you said that a lot of 38 Degree members felt that they'd become quite disaffected. So if there's one way to get more engaged, what would your advice be there?
I think my advice would be for politicians to genuinely and sincerely show that they are listening to the public. I think a lot of the stuff that we see politicians say in the media is frankly aimed at their rivals in politics or their rivals in other political parties. And I think the public is far cleverer than they're often given credit to, and it doesn't take much to perceive the real aims behind some of the kind of cabinet versus cabinet sniping that's going on. I would suggest the politicians, if they take my advice, that they should stop it and more genuinely listen to the public and really understand some opinion polls, maybe go to some focus groups, maybe speak to their constituents and understand what people's hopes and fears are for Brexit. Because although there is obviously, I think a minority of people on the side of Leave and the side of Remain who still feel very deeply attached to that kind of division, still feel deeply attached to their identity as a Leave and Remain voter. But what we see is actually the vast majority of the British public having a pretty practical, hands-on, let's just get it sorted approach to Brexit. And that's definitely the approach that's characterised the members who've got involved in the DIY Brexit campaign. And I think they're the people who really want to see politicians making sufficient progress, laying out what decisions would genuinely mean for their constituents and for the public, getting on with the job with Brexit, and listening to people rather than fighting between themselves.
Okay. And just finally then, if anyone would like to get more involved with 38 Degrees, what should they do?
So the easiest thing to do is to Google 38 Degrees or Google DIY Brexit. There's a website that we've just updated with lots of information about what's on the DIY Brexit manifesto. And if you have a look on the 38 Degrees website or on our Facebook page, then you can see loads of the campaigns that we're running. And there'll be really easy ways that you can get involved with the click of a button, whether that's signing a petition on the small end or signing up to go to a 38 Degrees meeting on the more committed end. So there are lots of things that you can do, but I would suggest having a Google of 38 Degrees as a first place to start.
Laura, thank you very much for joining us on the Brexit podcast today.
Thanks, Tim.
And the Brexit podcast has been brought to you by Jennifer Hahn, Warren Fox, Holly Dugmore, and myself, Tim Hemming, with the theme music by Kevin McLeod.